Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking passive income plans, paying points, and rewards rug pulls.
That's right. And when you say reward rug pull, what we're referring to here are credit card rewards. And so on that note, I think we'll get to talking about Robinhood Gold. That's actually one I'm excited about personally.
Am I getting too extreme with the alliteration on Friday Flights, Matt?
No. Okay. It's something for them to latch onto, Joel.
I want another P followed by a P. I don't know why I'm obsessed with that sort of way of naming our Friday Flight episodes.
It just flows, man. But before we get to the actual stories, though, let's pour one out for behavioral economist Daniel Kahneman.
Yeah. So, yeah, he passed away at the age of 90, which is...
That was yesterday,
a long, full life.
Was it Thursday?
Wednesday, yeah. And I think it's just, yeah, pour one out, because we talk about this regularly on the show, how personal finance it's not all about math. We know that we're just irrational creatures as human beings. And nobody highlighted that better than Daniel Kahneman. He basically kicked off a whole new field of research.
Well, you say, like, you enter into that conversation with the assumption that we all know that. And the reason we know that is because of Daniel Kahneman.
Right.
Like, I feel like that was one of his biggest contributions, was the fact that, like, we think we're rational. We think we can be objective and look at all of the different facts. But no, in fact, we are subjective. It depends on our life experiences as to our behavior, right? Yeah. Like we're not...
And our emotions and all sorts of things
at
play.
Yes, we take shortcuts. We take cues from other people. Like, we just go with our gut sometimes, as opposed to receiving all of the information that's available to us and making a perfectly rational decision.
Gains don't feel as powerful as losses do, and all of these different
Even
things...
Even though it's the same dollar amount.
Right. And all these things that he was able to highlight that really inform, I think... at least some of what we talk about on the show, because there are some things where it's like, hey, this is math, or hey, this is policy, this is how this works. Maybe you should consider taking advantage of this, or hey, the economic tide has swung a little bit, and actually there's things to consider over here. But there's also a lot to talk about on the behavior spectrum, and that truly, so much of that goes back to the discipline, essentially, that he founded.
That's right. So Daniel Kahneman, thank you for all of your work. SBF, no thank you for all that you've done. Did you see that his sentencing came through?
I did.
Yeah.
25 years. That I can't tell if that's fair or not enough, but...
I think it's fair.
It's one of the two.
He did seem...
if he got like a slap on the wrist, like 5 years in some community service, that would have been rough.
Yeah, well, he was apologetic, and I think it seems like
Finally.
It's true.
Because for a long time, he was like, what do you mean? I didn't do anything.
It seems like he recognizes the harm that he caused to lots of people. And so, I don't know. Any lesson that seems...
Or at least he says he's acknowledging it.
That's true.
Does he feel
that way? He's not locked away for 70 years, essentially, for life.
But. It's kind of like when I apologized to my parents growing up when I did something and really, I just wanted to not be in trouble. I have a feeling that might be what he's doing, but I'm glad to see white collar crime doesn't get enough punishment in this country. And so, so what SBF did was terrible. It really impacted his thievery, essentially impacted the lives of millions of people, and he deserves to go away for a long time.
That's true. Yeah, it wrecks the crypto markets. And on that note, actually, next Wednesday, we're going to be speaking with Marco from Whiteboard Finance about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So you can look forward to that one.
That'll be a fun combo. All right, but let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday Flight, a sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And inflation continues to kind of be a water cooler talk, even though it's died down a lot and we're not experiencing like, crazy egg prices doubled in just 2 months. Nothing like that's happening. But
although egg prices are up because,
well,
it's Easter weekend.
That's true.
Yeah, because there's just all the demand for the Easter egg hunts.
I know. My mom dropped off 15 for us, which was really sweet of her, so we could
pay
some egg dying
for that. It's like a 401k loan.
Exactly. Well, I think especially for people in California, but really anywhere there's a Trader Joe's, people are saying, uh-oh, banana prices just went up. Trader Joe's, they sell, they're like one of the only stores that sells bananas in singles, and their pricing went up.
Right there at the register, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually like right as you're walking into the fruit aisle. Yeah. And it's a great, great store, but now you want your banana? It's 23 cents instead of 19 cents. It was kind of like, in my mind, kind of like the Costco hot dog.
Exactly.
That has remained at $1.50, and the bananas were 19 cents for 20 years. And so people are like, I don't think they're revolting, but they're a little concerned at least. And I understand that. But obviously, bananas are still incredibly cheap, just like eggs, even if they go up in price. 20%, it's one of those things where it's still vastly more affordable than a lot of other foods you could buy.
Yeah, hopefully I can continue to enjoy my daily banana. We both have a daily banana with our coffee in
my
the morning
kids have been
here
asking
in the office.
For a bedtime banana lately. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's probably like the last thing you want, right? It's like loaded with sugar.
Well, now I need to tell them, sorry, too expensive.
One of the reasons why historically they've been cheap is because of the fact that bananas are all clones of the same banana.
One variety, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the Cavendish, I think, is the name of it. It's like, literally, they're like stormtroopers. They're all, it's like the exact same banana.
Unlike apples.
That's just been replicated over like decades, I guess, which, not to be an alarmist, but that's why some folks are saying that there could be, like, all of our bananas as we know it could get wiped out because they are literally all the same banana. And if there's a disease that hits Central South America where there's like hundreds, thousands of acres of bananas, then we basically would have to rebuild our bananas as we know it from scratch.
New banana infrastructure.
But yeah, like literally, yeah. Which is
That's frightening.
Which is kind of crazy to think. So
then your bananas, instead of being 23 cents, they're like 82 cents a piece.
Yeah. So just saying that so that we all appreciate our bananas while we still have them.
And I understand Trader Joe's it's a company that needs to remain profitable.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about passive income, because your next side hustle choice, it might be running a vending machine. The reason is because it's trendy. Passive income, it's the quest, and vending machines seem to be the current answer for many hustlers out there, and there's been a rise in interest. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. There's a chance that it could be a profitable endeavor, sure, but before you go out there and drop a bunch of money on whatever vending machine that you want to purchase, I guess.
Those fancy robotic ones where they get the soda and then they like tilt it sideways
that way
and it slides out.
That way it doesn't get all carbonated and shook up.
I think those things are like $7,000.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, it takes a lot of upfront cost.
Or even just like a bubblegum machine. Before you do that, so much depends on the specifics, because when you dig a little bit deeper, the average machine earns just over $500 a month. And I'm not going to say that that's not nothing, but it may not be this endless fountain of money like you were imagining it to be.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, that machine, it needs to be restocked. It needs to be repaired. If it gets tagged, you got to show up and clean that thing off.
Well, that would be the worst.
But again, $500 a month, like that is just the average. It makes me think of with real estate investing. There is a wide spectrum of what it is that individuals are making. And like real estate, location is key. And so when you're talking about vending machines, the best machines, they make the bulk of the returns, the machines that are well placed. And if you are just getting into the game, it's going to take you a while to be able to snag contracts with the different business owners that would allow you to have that prime real estate.
Agreed. Yeah, no, you have to think about location in the vending. It's not just like, boom, I got a vending machine and it's just printing money. That's not how it works. I had a friend, Matt.
It's not like a crypto farm.
Right. I had a friend who had a photo booth, and that was actually much better decision than a vending machine, because she had it in a record store, and it was easier to maintain. There wasn't as much to go wrong with it. You didn't have to come by and restock every week or something like that. It was more like once a month putting in new film.
Non-perishables.
Right.
I like that.
It was a much easier business to run. So I don't know, maybe but it was in a high traffic area in a really cool part of town. That's another, it was a selling point. And so I think if you want to go the vending machine route, I don't know, maybe a photo booth route is better. People are interested in that. They tap their credit card, pay $5 and get a film strip. And maybe that's a more profitable way to go. I think this also isn't for everyone, right? And interestingly enough, in this article, like the folks who have done well, they tend to pivot from just having vending machines and they want to become vending machine influencers.
Where you see the footage of them and they got this bucket, this giant bucket of quarters, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's so much money.
Yeah.
It's like that scene from The Goonies where he goes and he's like stealing all the money from the well.
Still haven't seen it.
What?
I know.
You've never seen The Goonies?
No.
Dude.
I need to.
Oh my gosh. It holds up.
Okay.
You need to go back and see that one.
I will.
All right.
So, okay. One of the guys they highlighted in the story, he has over 500,000 YouTube subscribers, and he's basically teaching folks how to make money with vending machines. He's making a lot more creating content than he is selling soda and Powerade and stuff like that, right? And we talked back in episode 353, which I think of as kind of one of our cornerstone episodes, how passive income is a myth. And we love the idea of people having multiple sources of income and to be pursuing what we called in that episode leveraged income, where upfront effort pays off in more passive gains down the road.
Sure.
But the truth is, it takes time and work to see those endeavors succeed. Just because vending machine investing is hot right now, it's making the headlines, or you're seeing more influencers on TikTok or Instagram or something pushing it, that doesn't mean it's a smart move for you. Makes me think, Matt, of writing a book. And we have friends who have written books, and they say they make between $2,000 and $5,000 a month from perpetual sales of that book, but they have to keep pushing it. They have to keep marketing it. And it took a heck of a lot of work up front to write that book. So I think if you were to pick their brain and say, how's that passive income coming along? They'd say, well, it's great that I put in a lot of hard work at the beginning and I'm reaping the rewards, but passive income, I don't know if that's what I call it.
That's true. Okay, so another investing trend that's ticking up is house flipping. Obviously we've seen rising home prices. Well, that has led to an increased interest in flipping homes. And it's not that you can't make money flipping a home. Folks clearly do this. I actually did this back in the day when photography was a little bit slower.
What year was that?
2015.
Okay. Yeah. You did decently well with that house flipping endeavor.
Yeah. Like we entered into that thinking there's a chance we might move into it. Ourselves. And honestly, that's a strike against us because what that means is we were making some decisions based on us personally as opposed to thinking about it from a purely business standpoint. But even still, it was a deal and we were able to pounce on it, make it happen, knock it out within a short period of time. That being said, please be forewarned because the risks are much bigger when your timeline shrinks if you are looking to flip a home. You got to know what you're doing. Or maybe you've got to have a really good relationship with a contractor because you can lose money fairly easily. Transaction costs are certainly a big reason why, not to mention the tax consequences of a shorter time period where you're hanging on to that. And honestly, timing is a big part of this as well, because I feel like, what do they say? Time heals all wounds.
Yeah.
Well, time can heal financial wounds because sure. The longer you're able to hold on to that property, you're going to see appreciation. If it's a long-term investment property where you're renting it out, you're going to see rents typically increase. But just
like if you make a mistake, time lessens the severity of that mistake.
100%, man, 100%. And so I think whether it be vending machines or real estate, you still have to think through what is your unique advantage. Like there needs to be something, some sort of almost unfair advantage that you have that allows you to make a profit as opposed to you just having an interest in doing that. And so when it comes to...
Like if you're a candy specialist, you're like, I know Mr. Goodbar and Kit Kat, like the back of my hand.
Yeah. I mean, like literally, like, or connection with somebody within the snack industry, or like I'm thinking about real estate, like maybe you are quite handy and you are incredibly patient and you don't mind living in a construction zone. Guess what? You are prime for an in-house flip, basically where you live in the property, renovate it, live there for at least 2 years, sell that thing without having to pay any capital gains on that thing.
That's key. That's key because that's one of the best things with high transaction costs. If you're also paying tax on the profit, it's hard to make it work unless you really, really know what you're doing and you're doing some of the work yourself. But if you do the live-in flip route, you've got a little extra time on your side and you're reducing or eliminating essentially the tax burden.
Yeah. Even if you're like, well, no, I don't want to do that, guys. I'm not very handy. Okay. Well, you need to be really good at project management and you need to have a good network. You need to have a like bunch of great contractors who you can call on and to manage that thing. All I'm saying is that there needs
to be... reasonably
priced. Yeah. You need to have some sort of unique advantage. And because if it was as easy as all the influencers are making it seem, whether we're talking about vending machines or real estate, everybody would be doing it. And guess what? More and more folks might be doing it, which means what? it's harder to make a profit, which going back to my premise, you still have to find some sort of unique proposition, like something unique that sets your services or your products apart.
Everything's harder in real life than it seems on YouTube or TikTok.
Yep.
That's also, I guess, a lesson here. All right, let's continue talking about real estate for just a second, Matt. On that note, it's becoming more common for folks to pay discount points in order to reduce the mortgage rate that they're taking on when they're buying a home. Almost 2/3 of buyers paid more upfront to reduce their interest rate compared to only 30% of buyers in 2021. When we were in a climate of low rates, people were like, oh, 3%? Great. I don't feel the need to buy that rate down anymore. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And so that's according to
historic lows. Why would I do that?
Right. Exactly. This is data from Freddie Mac. But we would say paying for discount points is typically a bad use of your money for multiple reasons. First, often you don't lower the rate enough to produce a great enough effect. So, oh, cool, I'm saving $40 a month, but it cost me $5,000 to do that. Well, the math doesn't really add up on that front, right? And then second, most buyers don't stay in the home long enough to make the numbers work. So you buy the home, you pay down the rate, and then you move 3 or 4 years later. Well, there's a really good chance that was money that was ill spent because it takes time for that discount for the, you know, when you buy those points down for that to actually pay off. And then third, even if you do stay in the home long enough, you might not hold on to the mortgage long enough to make it worth it. So even if you stay in the home for 20 years, but you refinance when rates go down after something like 4 or 5 years, well, and the projections are the rates are going to go down. Who knows? We've always said, hey, be careful basing your choices on, you know, future hopes and dreams about what happens with interest rates. But still, if interest rates do go down and you end up refinancing, you're going to wish you had saved that $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, whatever it is that you used to pay down points, because you didn't hold on to that mortgage long enough to make it worth it.
That's true. I think the biggest key is always is to shop around with multiple lenders, right? And so what that means is to not just go with a mortgage lender that your agent recommends. So far, your agent, they've been super helpful. And they're lining everything up for you. They're like, hey, I know a guy. Oh, this is how this works. Oh, I've got a lender for you to check out.
Can you digitally sign these forms for me? Oh, it's so easy.
Yeah, you don't have to do what they say. Keep that in mind. They could be the best, but they might not be. You might be able to get a rate that's lower, even by like a quarter, a half a point, perhaps, by shopping around. And then, of course, what you would want to do in that case, you just pocket what you would have paid in points instead, because I think this is especially true, man, as folks are more transient, as folks are living in their homes for fewer and fewer years, it seems like a holdover.
Yeah.
Like the paying down of points, it makes sense that this was something that folks did back in like the 80s and the 90s, even when rates were sky high. Back then, rates were even higher than they are now. And again, there just seems to be this cultural shift that's taken place as folks are, I think, moving to where the opportunity oftentimes is.
Yeah.
Not staying put.
I think you're right. If you're going to do one of those two things, shopping around with multiple lenders is going to be far more powerful than paying points to reduce the mortgage amount. And I think it's more than worthwhile. I would reach out to a credit union. I would also talk to like a local mortgage broker who can shop with a bunch of different banks on your behalf as well. I think those are better ways to save money instead of forking over more cash in order to reduce your payment amount by a little bit. And again, it might be worthwhile. It depends on the numbers and how long you plan on being that home.
So you got to crunch the numbers.
You're like, oh, cool. If this $5,000, if I'm going to make it back in lower payments over the course of 18 months, 22 months, then it might make sense. But for a lot of people, it's going to take a whole lot longer to make that money worth it. Last but not least, Matt, I feel like there's been a lot more conversation about whether or not retirees should pay off their mortgage. The answer from a financial planning perspective has typically been yes. But I feel like on that, common wisdom has been shifting too. And keeping the mortgage around is offering more financial flexibility and even higher returns without even having to take on any additional risk. So when you don't even have to look at the market. That's been the thing, I think, over time is like, well, can you earn more money in the market than by paying off your mortgage? Well, then invest instead. Well, if you can just save and beat the rate of your mortgage, that makes it even a much easier decision. Because
how about a guaranteed return on your money?
Because when you're in your twilight years investing in the S&P 500, well, that comes with a whole lot of risk that you might not be willing to take on either. And you might want the sure thing of mortgage payoff. But I would say keeping the mortgage around is actually the more conservative approach these days. And they're just downsides to being house rich and cash poor. Plus, you can always pay that mortgage off when or if savings rates decline. So, hey, savings rates go back to 2% and you had kind of money banked in a high yield savings account and your interest rate's 4%. Well, okay, maybe now it makes sense to start to pay off that mortgage more quickly. But for the time being, if you're making 5% and your mortgage is 3.5% or 4%, I would just kind of hold steady and pay it off as agreed.
Totally. Yeah, this also seems like a holdover from yesteryear, yeah, where when we had mortgage rates that were crazy high, like that was a part of the financial plan for retirees, was to eliminate that house payment. But for all the folks out there who are retiring that have 30-year rates that they perhaps refinanced 5 years ago when things were crazy low, that's something that if I were you, I'd be hanging on to for the rest of my life, maybe even longer.
Into the grave.
To have a mortgage that to potentially outlive you while you're earning more in savings and certainly in the market.
It sounds crazy.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but I think you're right. As long as that money that's sitting there in savings, you're not tempted to go and do other stuff with it. If you hold it in reserve as liquidity and as a financial backstop, I think that makes sense. All right, we've got more to get to on this episode, including we got to talk about credit card rewards. Matt, we really like credit card rewards, but some of the richest credit cards might be losing their luster. We'll talk about that and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, we're back. We will talk about credit cards. And again, I'm excited to talk about Robinhood Gold, baby. I'm bullish.
that is your. You've got all your investments under one Robinhood roof now, don't you?
No. We're jumping the gun a little bit. We're jumping the gun. But let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This is from Go Banking Rates. The headline reads, Rich Dad Robert Kiyosaki reveals why the 401k is a horrible retirement plan. Yeah, let's go ahead and talk some more smack about Kiyosaki again, because in this article, he gives a lot of ridiculous information. Like, it was such a straw man argument against the 401k. For instance, he says that most funds in a 401k come with a 2% fee. What kind of funds are you invested in? Because fees have come down precipitously. Some of our favorites out there, they have zero or close to zero fees attached, like 0.03.
Yeah.
That's a far cry from 2%, my friend.
I don't know what funds he's looking at. They must be incredibly exotic.
So freaking expensive. He calls the employer match an illusion of additional income. And sure, he's right to point out vesting timelines, right? Like, there are certain amounts of time that you need to stick with an employer to maintain the ability to keep that match. But clearly, the employer match enhances your ability to save for your future. A 100% return on your money if you have that perk.
Or at least a 50%. Sometimes it's 50%.
Sure. But he's discounting it completely. Fidelity, their research, their stats show that 401k millionaires have increased by 41% year over year. And so, in our opinion, we think the 401k, especially with an employer match, is still the number one retirement account that you should be considering.
And Mr. Kiyosaki has, I'm just going to use a reverential term there, he's been predicting, you know, the stock market crash, or he's basically said, oh, look, things are about to hit the fan, and you should get out of the stock market and invest in, I think he would say, real estate, maybe even precious metals. I'm not exactly sure what his philosophy is, but every time he predicts a market crash, the market continues to rocket upwards. He has been consistently wrong on that front. And then to say that, you know, all 401ks are a bad investment when the vast majority of Americans, the way they achieve millionaire status is through traditional retirement accounts, is also just absurd.
Yeah.
And maybe he has preferred ways of investing and he's done just fine for himself, but to make it sound like 401ks are bad for you and should be avoided completely is total nonsense.
Yeah. And every point that he gave to refute 401ks, there was like the tiniest kernel of truth.
Right.
It's so inaccurate. And yeah, what I hate is that it can lead folks astray who don't know that, oh no, that literally should be the very first thing that you do.
Well, and they're like, oh, this dude sold 5 million books.
Yeah.
I should probably listen to him. He knows what he's talking
dude,
about.
Dude, Kiyosaki is the original influencer.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
he's making more money, more of his fortune being Rich Dad, Poor Dad, as opposed to a renowned investor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess this just goes to show, be careful who you follow, who you listen to, and is he right about some things? I've never even read the book, Matt. I know a lot of people have. We've had listeners who swear by that book.
I used to recommend it. I don't really do that anymore. Seriously.
Yeah, I believe it. And I'm sure that book, especially that was written in a different time, and I'm sure there's some good information in there for people, but it's not on my bookshelf. I don't plan on reading it anytime soon, especially when he keeps giving just ridiculous advice like this. But on that note, though, the Labor Department is attempting, again, to require financial advisors to be fiduciaries, which basically means that they're legally required to make decisions that are in your best interest. And you, as just an individual living in this society, going to seek financial help from someone, you might say, aren't they supposed to do that? Aren't they supposed to help me make good decisions with my money? Like, don't they have to do what's in my best interest? And the answer is no, they don't. And for some reason, Matt, this one's become a political football. I don't get it, why you have to be on a blue or red team when it comes to wanting advisors to have to offer advice that is in the individual's best interest. You'd think we could all agree on that, that advisors shouldn't be able to steer you towards products and investments that enrich them at your expense. And it remains to be seen if this next attempt at creating a fiduciary rule is going to be successful. But for the time being, if you decide to hire a financial advisor, make sure they hold themselves to the fiduciary standard themselves. So even though they're not required to, make sure that this is an extra step they're taking. XY Planning Network and Hello Nectarine are two of our favorite sites. And the only people listed on those sites are fiduciaries, sworn fiduciaries. So make sure you're looking out for yourself when you enter into a relationship with an advisor. And maybe at some point, it will be the law of the land that all advisors have to, you know, meet the standard.
All right, let's get to the rewards rug pull, because the best credit cards out there might become less rewarding really soon. So Visa and MasterCard, and specifically the payment networks that they oversee, their swipe fees. They have been a significant expense for businesses for a long time. Well, an agreement was struck this week allowing retailers to charge more for accepting the different fancy credit cards out there that have the higher fees.
By the way, I think this was a legal fight that was had been around for 20 years. Imagine that. Jeez. Kind of legal slog.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. There is an agreement, but it still has yet to be, it's not finalized. Yeah, there hasn't been like a resolution yet, so this is all... It seems like it's likely, but we'll see. But we're just wanting to highlight the fact that some of these upper crust credit cards that come with the best perks, that they are, it looks like they're the ones that are being targeted. Essentially, any card with the Visa Infinite or the MasterCard World Elite branding on there, because every swipe of those top-notch cards can cost a retailer 50 cents more with every transaction, which, again, let's take it back to the vending machines. Sounds like nothing. You're like, oh, how are you going to get rich just 50 cents at a time? Guess what? It adds up really quick when you consider all the different transactions that are taking place via credit cards throughout the world.
And the retailer just takes it on the chin. They don't know when you're making the swipe. Well, which card are you using and how much more is it costing me? They just feel it on the back end.
That's right. But now retailers do have the ability to charge you more if you want to use that card. They also have the ability to negotiate some of those swipe fees. But we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. Retailers, are they going to pass on the higher fees? I feel like retailers probably won't want to change the status quo because it feels like an aggressive sort of thing to do, to say, wait, what kind of card are you using? Well, I'm going to have to charge you extra for that. As a small business owner, you run the risk of alienating your customers by taking that approach, even if that credit card costs you more.
You run the risk of bait and switch.
Yeah.
And where you think it's going to cost one thing and they're like, oh, actually it's going to cost you this much more.
Right. Even then, like, are customers going to accept the new regime of paying more to use their preferred card? I don't know that this, like, even though this in principle is something that's agreement that's been hashed out, in reality, I don't know that businesses can actually enforce this without doing harm to themselves. So we'll keep an eye on this one. But I guess one takeaway is to make sure you have more than one card. Like if you have a Chase Sapphire Reserve, which is one of those Visa Infinite cards, combine that with a more basic card like the Citi Double Cash. I think that's a good way to proceed, because then you end up going to a retailer who does ask which card you're using before you swipe or tap.
Sure.
And if it's going to cost you more to use one over the other, well, then you can decide whether it's worth it or not. But at least you have the option to use a card and to keep the price down.
Sure. Or you can just dump that Double Cash card because you switched over to Robinhood Gold, because they're offering 3%. Unlimited on all transactions.
That's true.
So this is a new fancy card that they're rolling out. The gold card, they're actually offering a literal 10-karat gold credit card to like the first, I don't know how many, it's a limited quantity of folks.
5,000, I think, people.
But if you
who
get,
refer 10 of their
if
friends.
If you get 10 of your friends to sign up, you get one of these, and it's legit gold, and it's a working credit card, which is kind of sounds terrible, because like if your wallet wasn't already targeted, it's like no literally
I would just melt the credit card
down. You can't do much with a stolen wallet full of credit cards, but literally there's one in there that's made out of freaking gold. I think I saw you could even opt for the $1,100 bonus rather than the actual gold card, because that's what the card's worth.
Oh my gosh,
$1,100, like,
that's
literally
crazy.
It's made of gold. But so let's kind of talk, I want to provide a quick recap, because in the past we used to not be too keen on Robinhood because they didn't offer retirement accounts. All they had were brokerage accounts. Once they started offering IRAs, both traditional and Roths, my tune changed a little bit. It's like, oh cool. Then they started offering a match. No other brokerage out there has ever offered a match unless you're employed by them, right? Unless it was your employer. Then they rolled out Robinhood Gold, where you pay a little bit every month, or you pay annually, and they're going to match you 3% on your IRA. So that's when I started to think, oh, all right, this is pretty interesting. Then earlier this year, or into last year, they rolled out the, hey, any money that you transfer over from a previous IRA, we will also match 3% on that entire amount. Basically, at that point, I was like, all right, this is almost too good to be true. Like, what's going on here?
The hook was in the mouth.
And now they
reeled you in.
No, they set the hook with this 3% cashback card, because all of those more premium 3% offerings that they were offering, you have to be a gold member. Mm-hmm. Or you got to pay the subscription. You got to pay either $5 a month, which equals $60, which isn't terrible. Or if you pay annually, it's only $50. And so the fact that there is literally no limit on the cashback that you can earn with this credit card, dude, I've got to report back, because you've got...
I'm guessing you've applied for it.
Yeah, I applied. And I wanted to highlight, too, that 3% on the IRA match, you have until the end of April. So you've got about 30 days left in order to make that happen. But yeah, I haven't pulled the trigger yet and done all that. But yeah, I went ahead and officially joined Gold. And I'll let you know how it goes, man.
Yeah, please do.
Because I'm all in. I'm like, holy, I truly see it just like credit card rewards, where it's like, okay, this is a debt product. Yeah. Why would you use this? Well, it's like, well, if you use it responsibly, there are benefits to be gained. And that's how I see the Robinhood app. It's like, oh, yeah, you might be tempted to trade individual stocks. But like we always say on the show, if you are, for the other 95% of your money, fully invested within an IRA, within a total stock market index fund, or an S&P 500 index fund, even up to 5% of messing with some single stocks, that's not something we hate.
Yeah. 3% cash back. No annual fee on this card either, by the way. I mean, granted, you have to pay the $50 a year for Robinhood.
Yeah, there's effectively an annual fee. But again, there are other benefits that you get with it, including like a five. I think it's like 5.25% that they're paying on
something like that
within their savings as well. So.
So, yeah, I feel like you're right. I'm don't have my retirement accounts with Robinhood, but it's starting to look more appealing. It has definitely crossed my mind. And I was kind of, I guess, waiting for you to be the guinea pig, test the waters. Let me know how it goes.
Once all my money gets siphoned off, I'll come back.
Once Vlad
come back here with my hat in my hand.
Buys a fancy airplane with all of your money. No, that's not going to happen. But yeah, the first card that we know of to be essentially no annual fee and offer 3% cash back is pretty sick.
Yeah, double cash, that's been around forever. And same thing with the
Fidelity.
Yeah. So it's like, again, which also has an investing tie-in as well. But the fact that they're upping it to 3%, baby, that's... Yeah, it's attractive.
This is going to create even more competition in the credit card space. I think of that as a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our last story, Matt. The CEO of the world's largest investment firm, BlackRock, his name is Larry Fink. He has been going around this week expressing concern over what he calls a growing retirement crisis. Everything's got to be a crisis these days, right? Nothing is just a problem or an issue to be resolved. It's a crisis, because if you don't call it a crisis, it doesn't get the eyeballs, doesn't get the attention. Well, with pensions being a thing of the past, with people living longer, plus changes that obviously need to happen to the Social Security program to secure its future, he's not wrong. Like, there is a growing problem. I'm not going to call it a crisis. There is a growing retirement problem in the United States, but he's also using his rhetoric to launch a new product. Of course.
He's got something to sell.
Right. So it's a target date fund product. No problem there. But with one marked difference. It shifts some of your retirement funds into an annuity as you approach retirement age. That provides then a more stable and predictable stream of income in retirement, but it's not without cost. The details are somewhat unknown, man. I was kind of scouring BlackRock's site on this to figure out, well, what exactly does this look like? And the specifics are paltry right now, but it sure looks like, from what we can tell, this probably isn't the best thing for most people.
Yeah, and the key product here, or the key problem to this product that they're launching, is the fact that it is annuity-based. They've got their pros and cons. Predictability, that's certainly a pro, right? That predictability is nice. But the big problem is typically how expensive annuities are. The high annual fees, the sales charges. Because it's an insurance product, those fees can be egregious. And then depending on how early that transition happens, how quickly or how soon you transition to annuities, your asset allocation, basically, it can have a real impact on your overall level of wealth, because you're going to see less growth.
And I think BlackRock says that transition starts at age 55, which sounds a little early.
I think they said too, like, you can make that call whenever you want. So I think there might be some folks who are thinking, oh, well, I kind of want to retire early, so maybe I should pull the trigger and make that happen even sooner. Which is actually kind of the opposite of what you need to be doing if you're looking at an early retirement. But our take is that he certainly diagnosed the problem correctly, right? Like, we even agree with Mr. Fink that the U.S. retirement age, that it should rise, certainly, as life expectancy has. That's something we've talked about that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think he points out the Netherlands as being an example of doing this, that when the average lifespan goes up in that country, well, so does the retirement age. And they kind of track each other.
And we have not touched our retirement age. Like, we talked about...
Why do you think Social Security is a mess?
Oh, my gosh.
That is why.
It makes sense to make these changes, but expensive annuities, de-risking your portfolio too early, we think that those are going to have harmful consequences as well. And I think that one of the things that they're going to be able to sell, assuming they launch this product, they're going to be able to sell a lot of it, because there is an illusion of control. You've got this false sense of security, thinking that everything's going to be all right, but nothing is perfectly predictable, because maybe you've got...
I thought you were going to say nothing's going to be all right. It'll be fine, guys.
It'll be fine. But, like, let's just assume, like, you're assuming a certain cost of living, and who knows where prices and things are going to be in the future. So even as retirees are clinging to this as this source of stability. Like, they're, even that in and of itself is moving within the tides of what we're facing in our economy.
Well, and that is kind of what Social Security is supposed to be for us, right? Is that known quantity, that annuity, essentially, that if, especially the longer you wait, the more money you're going to get every single month. And it's a known quantity that doesn't shift except for to go up as the cost of living with those cost of living adjustments. But in this case, you're, who knows exactly what you're paying? I would be curious to know the details, and I'm waiting to see those released. How much are you paying for that added security? And is the price you pay too much for what you're getting?
Yeah, I guarantee it is. Not only are the prices going to be too high, but the return's going to be too low. So you're getting hit on both ends. Yeah. And I feel like we can confidently not recommend it already. But like, honestly, I even have an issue with like target date funds, because like in my mind, that's sort of like the DIY approach, because of, hey, okay, this will moderately de-risk over time. But even those, like, I have a hard time swallowing the, like, I think the average expense ratio on a target date fund is still 0.5%.
That's crazy.
That's still really sinking high.
But if you're with Vanguard and Fidelity has two different target date funds, by the way, one's expensive, one's not. If you're with our low cost firms, we're talking about essentially 0.1%. It's almost negligible.
It's a lot smaller, but still 0.1 is more than three times more than 0.03, which is infinitely more than completely free. And so I think there are ways of doing that even manually. And I know handling your finances and de-risking over time and buying more into bonds as you age isn't for everyone, but I don't know. I would like to think by the time that we get to that point, after a lifetime of talking about this, and like, this is part of why we had the show, to talk about it, by the time you are making some of these more nerve-wracking decisions, that you have the confidence to do something like that within your retirement years. But all right, that's going to be it for for this episode, buddy. We hope everyone, hey, happy Easter. We didn't even mention it's Good Friday today. So yeah, we hope everyone out there has a good Easter, and we'll see you back here on Monday with a fresh set of listener questions for you.
No doubt. All right, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.